Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
That they have power to hurt and will do
but
not.
Do not for the thing the most loving others of themselves distort or show, unmoved, so, and to temptation slow. They
hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. Well, today we're going to be doing a little bit of something different. Those of you that are regular listeners to the show know how much I enjoy good music. Well, little did I imagine I was going to have the opportunity to combine listening with Shakespeare. What about you? Is Shakespeare one of your favorite people? Well, if you're like so many individuals, you think Shakespeare, you'll think of Macbeth, you'll think of Hamlet. Well, how about sonnets? My guest today, David Duvall, is a man with a tremendous background in theater and in music and is a phenomenal musician himself. And I got to know David because of my husband, Freeman. And David was the director of a local theater here in the Pacific Northwest, but he's got quite a history behind him, and I'll let him explain that. But first, I want to welcome him. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's just such a joy to have you on the air. I remember when I first met you about 2 years ago. It was actually at the Dickens Festival, and I was invited to appear at a theater, which you were the director of in Tacoma, and I had the opportunity to chat with you. And your background was absolutely amazing with theater and music. Tell us what it is and how did you find yourself involved in this? What made the musical, theatrical environment such a passion for you?
I don't know what made it. I know that it's always been there. I've known from a very young age I was going to go into performing arts. I have difficulty, which is one of the reasons I created the Shakespeare CDs that you're going to share excerpts from today. I have difficulty separating music from theater because I think they're too closely connected, at least in my head, to pull apart from each other. They certainly had the same artistic birthplace a gazillion and a half years ago, whenever it was humanity started expressing itself, and somewhere along the line they pulled themselves apart, but I see them together. My parents were very musical, and I was composing and orchestrating at a very young age. And most people are actually surprised to learn that musicals are not my favorite type of theater. I much prefer Eugene O'Neill and Edward Albee and Shakespeare and Coward and Oscar Wilde and things where words are prevalent. I find a lot of music in words themselves. And so I've been blessed to be able to spend my life working as a professional theater/music artist across the country and predominantly up here in the Northwest, where I just really feel at home with the nature that's around me. So that's why I keep coming back up here. But
well, I can understand that, being a person that lives here myself. It's just absolutely magical. It's got something very special in its environment. With this, now, sonnets. Tell us about Shakespeare's sonnets. There might be many people in my audience that just are not aware of these, and I have some works by Shakespeare, you know, Hamlet, Macbeth, and things like that in my library, but I'm not that familiar with sonnets.
Well, the sonnets are a unique collection of things, and I don't think he ever intended to have them published. There's a number of books and master's theses that I've perused as I've been working on this project that speak to the issue of whether indeed he intended them to ever go public. But amongst his writings, there are a very unique and distinct group of piece of literature. They have a world all unto their own. There's no sense of time or chronological order to them. Many of them were written for a young man in England who he was, some people think he was hired to write sonnets for this guy by the guy's parents to encourage him to marry and reproduce, and some people aren't sure if that was the reason he was writing to him. There's also some of the sonnets who are written to a woman who is referred to as the Dark Lady, and there's great debate as to what her personal life was like when she was alive. There are sonnets that are written to both of them together, which sort of creates an interesting triangle in there. There is no gender differentiation in the Book of Sonnets at all, which makes them an interesting group of verse to read. And also the sonnets are full of age as an issue, but not an obstacle, as Shakespeare himself was about 20 years older than any of the other people he was writing to and or about. So he talks about how old he is and how soon he will be dead and what will happen to him after he is gone, and that these poems will be the best portrait that he could leave behind of these people he's so enamored with. And it cracks me up that he was somewhere around 40 or 42 at the time, since I'm, you know, into my 50s now and going, you thought you were old at 40? But, you know, it was a different century then, and he was old at 40, actually.
Yes, he was at that time. Most people were dead by the time they were in their 20s.
Yeah.
Seriously. And the children, the mortality of the children was, my goodness, it was rare if a child survived. I mean, and the mortality of women was really high. So at 40, he was an old man, but yet you said he's writing about people that are older than him, so they were
No,
really...
No, he was writing as himself being the oldest.
Oh, excuse me, I misunderstood.
And, and he's amazed that people that are, you know, 20 years younger than him are finding him attractive, and he doesn't... he's trying to apologize for that in several of them, and there's one of my favorites, I can't recall the number of it right now, where he outright defies time and says he refuses to grow old, which more or less is what he did.
Well, let's play for our audience track number one. Now, I need to let you know, those of you listening, David has put together three CDs. And the first piece that you heard, which was a wonderful, wonderful vocal that I heard that I thought would be a nice way to open the show, that is on the track that was the first one that he put out. And that is called, Who Will Believe My Verse? In Time to Come, which goes along with what he was just saying. This is what Shakespeare's attitude was to a degree, and so he sort of expanded it a little bit with that title. And then he's got two other discs, which we are going, not discs, but CDs. Take
Home
My Life.
They're discs. They're actually one CD. It just has two discs in the package.
Correct. So it's one CD, two discs in the package, but it's titled Take All My Love. We're going to be playing the first one on disc number two, which is Water Cools Not Love, and he's going to have to explain that one after we play it. So we're going to put that on for just a moment so that you can hear the words along with the exquisite music.
The little of God lying once asleep, laid by his side, his heart in flaming brand, whilst many nymphs that vowed chaste like to keep, came tripping by, but in her maiden hand. The fairest votary took of that fire, which many legions of true hearts had warmed. And so the general of hot desire was sleeping by a virgin hand disarmed. This brand she quenched in fuel, by which from love's fire took heat perpetual, growing a bath and helpful remedy for men's disease. But I, my mistress thrall, came there for cure. In this by that I prove, love's fire heats water, water cools not love.
David, Yeah. What is this sonnet all about?
Well, it's one of the last two of the 154 that he wrote, and it's really just a retelling of a Greek parable that explains that nothing can actually quench the fire of love. So
right.
It's not actually aimed at any one person, so it's the moral of the collective verse that he has put out so far. And the sonnet right before it, 153, does much the same thing, just slightly differently, and wasn't as easy for me to set to music, so I chose 154 instead.
Now, what made you choose the instrumentation that you did? How did you, when I was listening, and I listened to every single piece, when I was listening to them, you had certain instrumentations that you used, and there was such a nice balance with it. It was just marvelous.
Well, thank you. I will credit that with, although I am currently a composer and a director and often an arranger, I'm an orchestrator first and foremost. That's my primary artistic gift. And as an orchestrator, I strive to get my instrumentation to capture the emotional content and subtext of the music, no matter who the composer is, whether it's mine or other people's, and the bulk of my career has been spent orchestrating other people's music. But this just seemed like a really light-hearted jazz romp, so I chose a jazz trio, put some exquisitely fine of Seattle jazz musicians on it, doing some wonderful ad-lib work, and then she comes back in and sings over the top of all of them again, past where we left off with the excerpt we just did. And it just seems to all fit. So I know it's done when it all fits.
And let's play this one. This is Rise and Fall that we're doing, track number 11. And oh, wait till you hear this man's voice. Mm-mm. Okay, let's do it.
Of conscience hold it that I call her love, for whose dear love I rise and fall. Love is too young to know what conscience is, yet knows not conscience is born of love. Then, gentle cheater, urge not my amiss. Less guilty of my faults, thy sweet self prove. For thou betraying me, I do betray my nobler part.
You have to tell us who this guy is. This is a voice that when I hear it, I'm going, oh, women will just swoon. Is that why you chose him for this particular piece of sonnet? Oh,
well,
goodness.
It is indeed. That particular sonnet has always reminded me, well, it's very explicit. The lyrics in that sonnet are very explicit, and I wanted to point out to anybody who happened to be having trouble figuring out what the sonnet was about, that that's indeed what the sonnet is about. And I said, gee, it would be great if Barry White were still alive, but he's not. So I called a very good friend of mine, James Cadell, that's his name, who currently is a hair salon stylist in Federal Way, but he's many years ago did quite a lot of work on Broadway and then moved out here to, you know, have a life and raise a family.
Uh-huh.
But he has that voice that, you know, operates off the last octave of a piano. And he's a very good friend, and he was very gracious to come in and spend an hour or so in the studio putting that down for me. And the woman singing backup behind him right there is Tanisha Ross, and she is also the woman who sang the lead on Water Cools Not Love that you just played.
Okay.
So she was the jazz singer on the previous song as well.
Well, these voices are wonderful, and his is just amazing. Now, we've got another one, which is Compare Thou Thine. And, you know, when you hear this, in our time frame, you go, excuse me, tell me, compare thou thine? Well, let's listen to it, and then David will tell us what the sonnet is all about. Let's go for it.
my sin, grounded on sinful loving. Oh, but with mine compare thou thine own state, and thou shalt find in there it's not reproving. Or if it do, not from those lips of thine that have profaned their scarlet ornaments, and steal false bonds of love as oft as mine robbed other beds' revenues of their rent.
With too much disdain, lest sorrow lend me words, and words express the manner of my pity wanting pain. If I might teach thee which better it were, so not to love, yet a love to tell me so, as empty sick men, when they dance me near, no news but help from their physician throw.
Being lawful, I love thee, as
hello, yes, 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 yes. Didn't that make you just want to get up and dance? That is so, you know, when you're playing the music and you're listening to the Shakespearean sonnets, you really get into it. But this one I liked because it's, you know, about love is my sin, it's my virtue. Okay, David, you've got to explain this one.
Well, that is actually two different sonnets combined. The one that the gentleman is singing, who, by the way, his name is Spencer Hamp, and at the moment he's a senior at Mercer Island High School. That is sonnet number 142. And when Jerianne Perkins comes in, by the way, she's a freshman. She's from Fort Lewis, and she's a freshman at NYU right now.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
When hers comes in, that's sonnet number 140, and as I was adapting these things into yet another venue, because some of them have been turned into a piece for the theater, I was looking for something that could be a little bit more theatrical, and I was reading these back to back, and they seemed like a good argument with each other. So, and they're, each sonnet is dealing with, you've been unfaithful to me, or there's one later on coming, well, a lyric later on, past where we played, where he says, I don't know why I'm complaining about you being unfaithful to me a couple of times when I've been unfaithful to you about 20. And I just thought that would, now I lived in Miami for a while in my travels, and I would actually hear conversations like this when I was walking the street, because the Latin people are very expressive.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seemed like, well, this would be fun. So I just, as a composer and an editor, just figured out how to work those two sonnets together so I could create a battle between young lovers about which one was the most unfaithful and why, and that it all seemed to transport itself into a good strong Latin rhythm. And Santana's song Smooth was out about that same time. I thought, well, that'll help grab the kids, because one of the primary functions of the CDs as I was creating them was to create a vehicle to expose young minds or inexperienced minds, people who weren't used to the Shakespearean language, to Shakespeare so that he would make sense. Because
mm-hmm.
I think often people find him intimidating, and it's only because it's in essence reading a foreign language.
Yes.
And there's no one there to help you find your way into the world so you can get the wisdom, the wit, the often the really trash talk that he's very good at, and be amazed at how 400-year-old writing is still so incredibly pertinent.
Oh, it is. It's amazing. That's why Shakespeare's plays are still done, because
yep.
he really captured the human condition. Well, let's go to track number 2, and the title of that is Give Me Thy Lips to Kiss. Yes. Oh, boy. We're going to need an explanation on that one. Maybe. We'll think about it. Go ahead and play the piece. We'll see.
Blessed one whose motion sounds when
David, this one needs to be explained a little bit. This, to me, was so sensual. It was so sexy in the overall feel of the music, and I know you wanted it that way. So tell us the story about this sonnet.
Well, what I kind of have to set up a commonality between Shakespeare and myself in order to explain. I was raised in a household where innuendo and entendre were kind of the base language. And you were, you know, if when my dad and my sisters and I were talking, if we couldn't find three or four meanings inside what we were saying, we just simply weren't trying hard enough. And in this particular sonnet that Shakespeare wrote, he speaks a lot about getting your hand off the wood and putting it where he would rather have it be. And in essence, what the sonnet is saying, get your hands off the instrument and put them on me. I want you paying attention to that thing you're playing. I want you paying attention to me instead.
Mm-hmm.
So it seemed a pretty easy leap to move that to a bossa nova, hire one of the sexier voiced singers that I know, who happens to be a former student of mine, Cayman Illica. But she was 19 or 20 when she recorded that. Thank you very much. Just get it to put forth that whole atmosphere of your focus is in the wrong place. Stop playing over there. Come play over here.
Yes. And there's a lot of people, male and female, that could relate to that.
Indeed.
Now, rap. This is something that when I heard this arrangement, I said, this is an interesting approach. And we're going to play track number 3, which is a rap and chorus, and it's of time and youth.
His sickle hour, who has by waning grown, and therein shows thy lover's withering as thy sweet self grows. If nature, sovereign mistress over wrath, as thou goest onward, still will pluck thee back. She keeps thee to this purpose, that her skill may time, disgrace, and wretched minutes kill. Yet fear her, O thou minion of her pleasure, she may. But still not keep her treasure. Her audit, though delayed, answer is my speed and her quiet.
All right, David, you got to tell us how you managed to put rap to this. At least I called it rap. Is it rap?
It is rap. It's a combination of hip-hop and rap. And I was, again, trying to find a way to hit a younger audience so they could find an avenue into Shakespeare. But I was reading through the book as I was further and further into the process, the Book of Sonnets, and there were two or three that I really wanted to use the sentiment of, but I couldn't find. I was lacking any inspiration to find a musical genre in which to use them. And the one that you just would have heard, O Thou My Lovely Boy, I kept talking through a meter, trying to see what kind of musical style would come. And it all worked fine as long as I didn't try to put a melody on it. And then it was just not working. And so I finally just let that go for a while. And I heard on the radio a particular piece of hip-hop music, and all of a sudden all of my hairs on my arm went off up and my bells went off in my head. I went, oh, that's the thing. The reason I'm not hearing a melody is because it's not supposed to have one. I get it now. And so I went back and I reworked and I pulled these sonnets that all have to do with defying time and clinging to youth and maintaining our bodies and our minds when at the point when we think they're at their peak. And I just worked them into about a five-minute piece that includes all four sonnets and moves back and forth between the hip-hop and gospel singing and the rap back and forth. There's a female rapper that comes on later on in the piece that passed where we heard today, and they have a conversation back and forth about time and aging and refusing to let their loves become old.
Ah, well, you know, this is such an eclectic arrangement. It's absolutely wonderful. And Shakespeare never knew this is what his stuff was going to end up being. We've got one more piece I want to play. Now, it's called The More Perjured Eye, and that is a very strange title. But we're going to play it, and I think you're going to find that it's quite a nice piece. Let's go for it.
In loving me, thou knowest I am forsworn, but thou art twice forsworn to me, love swearing. In acts thy bed vow broke, and new faith torn, in vowing new hate after new love bearing.
Hello, this is Donna. Well, I wanted to close out our visit with David with that wonderful piece. But what a title, David. How in the world? Was that in the sonnet?
Yeah, More Perjured Eye. He talks about which one of us is the worst. But he actually wrote it, More Perjured Eye, E-Y-E, as a visual double entendre. And he does a lot of that in the sonnets, which I find entertaining. And it was chosen to be a tango because, again, it's a follow-up piece to the Santana salsa one that you liked earlier, but it's a mm-hmm. continuation of that conversation.
A continuation. Now, David, I know we're just about out of time here. Do you have a website that people can go to find out more about your production work and if they're interested in these CDs that they can get their own copy?
Absolutely, because they can download the CD now. Copies are in the process of being duplicated, but they can go to D. Duval Music Publishing. That's D-D-U-V-A-L-L musicpublishing.com. All of that written out in one word. And there they can get both sheet music and the audio tracks, just like you were downloading off of Amazon.
Wow.
All off that website, and it'll also connect, if anybody's interested, they can connect from that over to my professional website as well.
That is fabulous. David Duval, it has been a delight having you as a guest. Your music with Shakespearean sonnet brings it to a whole new level, and we wish you continued success. Don't forget, if you're interested in finding out more about what David has done, his talents are just absolutely amazing, D-D-U-V-A-L-L, musicpublishing.com. Go to that website, you'll find out more. David, thank you again for being my guest today. We're taking a break, and we're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. I know it seems perhaps a little strange that I'd have Shakespearean music on, but I'll tell you what, when you listen to the music and then you hear the lyrics, it's absolutely amazing. I didn't know anything about these sonnets, so it really is one of a kind. David is just a phenomenal musician. And if you know of any teachers that are having a tough time getting their students interested in literature, wow. Listening to music like this, can you imagine listening to a sonnet by Shakespeare and doing the tango? Woohoo! I think that's absolutely marvelous. Well, this is Donna, and our phone lines are now open. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, I would be delighted to do that. And if you wonder what that chatting is, well, I am a psychic, and I will give you a reading on the air. So all I need from you is your first name or your initial. I love to know what part of the country you're calling in from, and then after that, just sit back, relax, and listen in. I'll tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome, of course, to ask me a question about anything that you like. Here is the toll-free number again, 888-815-9756, and that's worldwide. No matter where you are, you can call in toll-free, 888-815-9756. And it is just absolutely a joy to be able to share my skills with you. The reason being is that I like people to know that psychic ability is something that belongs to everyone, but you do have to work at it, surprisingly enough. I know people will say, well, I guess you were just born with this. What people don't realize is for me to develop the mental discipline of focus and concentration had involved over 10 years of work and practice before I even started doing public work. Now, I know there are other people that say that they can just do it instantaneously, and I was able to do it instantaneously, but one of the things I found is that I had to learn the language of my mind. Your mind is so fascinating because it is part of this universal pool of information, and for you to perceive and understand what you're getting, you have to go through a process of learning how your particular mental processes work, or physiological processes, or all of your senses. It's quite interesting, quite amazing, and I'll tell you, I am so glad that I have had the opportunity to be able to be involved in this line of work in a million years. I never ever thought it was something I was going to be doing, but it has enriched my life tremendously, and I'd like you to know, as my audience, that it can enrich yours just as much if you're willing to, well, invest in yourself, because that's what it's all about. It's investing in yourself. Well, I wanted to share with you a little bit of information about a Sutton Hoo. Now, this is a story that takes place on June the 6th, 1939. Britain had a bizarre and a group of fascinating treasures that were discovered by two people, Edith Pretty, yes, her name, last name is Pretty, and a museum curator called Guy Maynard. And these were found out about when they went to Charles Phillips of Selwyn College. Now, at Sutton Hoo, which was Edith Pretty's estate, he was amazed. Now, just imagine, you're invited into an estate, you're out on the property, and someone like Edith says, oh, come see what I've got in my backyard. What he saw was a huge open trench that had a buried boat in it. Apparently, this full ship, had been brought 800 yards inland from the river that was adjacent to her property. It was 90 feet long and had rows of iron rivets every 6 inches and lines of gray-black powder every 3 feet where the ribs were. Inside of the ship's middle was a treasure-packed burial chamber. And the grave robbers had not ever found it. Edith Pretty had. Now, in the early 1930s, this is how it was discovered. In the early 1930s, there was a ghostly figure that Edith Pretty saw strolling on her property. And she was curious. So she decided, she knew it was a ghost, she decided she would contact Guy Maynard and a local archaeologist whose name was Basil Brown. And she also had her gardener and her gamekeeper get busy digging. She wanted to find out what was going on because this ghost was right around this mound. Now, at one point, Basil Brown was told by his bosses to stop all this ridiculous nonsense and to wait for some other experts to come in. Well, he ignored his bosses, and he was the one that discovered this burial chamber. In 17 days, 263 objects were removed from it, including a gold and garnet pyramid brooch, a solid gold buckle, jeweled and enameled shoulder clasps, bone gaming pieces, and items of fur and feathers. There was a heap of purple metal. When it was lifted from the ship and placed on grass that was nearby, clicked when it was laid down, and it opened up and revealed a nest of 10 silver bowls. There were no bodies. No bones ever found in the vessel. They are suspecting that this ship might have been the grave of an East Anglian king whose name was Redwald. They believe he died around 1625. The reason they think it might be attributed to his grave is because this discovery is very similar to the written documentary of an ancient epic masterpiece called Beowulf. Yes, the movie. Fascinating, isn't it? Now, there were other mounds that they managed to uncover on Edith Pretty's property, and these other mounds on her property contained deteriorated and cremated remains of humans and animals. Now, in one of them, they found a warrior and his horse in full armor that had been buried together. But there's nothing that was ever found in the ship itself that explained who the owners of the vessel were or where they were from. Fascinating, isn't it? Every time we think we've got stuff figured out, we end up having some kind of an unusual happening that makes us aware that there's more that's gone on in history than we had any dreams about. Can you imagine how exciting that must have been? That must have been absolutely amazing. And the only reason she dug up her yard is because of this ghost that was haunting a particular area. Nobody even knows who the ghost was. Or I guess the ghost just disappeared once they uncovered the ship and the treasure. Who knows? They didn't tell the rest of that story. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. You know, I have a recipe here that I am thinking I'm going to share with you today. If you like chocolate and you like cherries, here it is. I think I'll share it with you. This is so easy. I'm fixing it for company that's going to be coming in a little bit, and I think it is really going to be a hit. So get a pad of paper together and a pen, and we'll get into that. So if I have time today, I will share it with you because this is so easy to do, and oh, it is going to be so pretty when it's served. Okay, before I do that, while you're getting your pad of paper and pen, I do want to remind those of you that are in the state of Washington that I'm going to be appearing at a special event in downtown Tacoma on November 21st. This is for the Dickens Festival, and it is going to be just absolutely marvelous. I'm going to be appearing at the King's Bookstore and will be doing many consultations for people, and part of the proceeds are going to be going towards whatever the charity is that the city or this group that's putting this event together is going to be working with this year. So if you want to find out more information about this fabulous family event, this is, I believe, their fifth year, but I would just say go to their website, which is the Dickens Festival, and that's Tacoma, Washington, and you will find that it will just give you everything you need to know about the activities that are going on for the kids of all ages. And like I said, I've said that last year it snowed. It was just magical. And this year, I don't know. I think we'll probably have rain. I don't know that we're going to have snow, but who can tell? Mother Nature. It depends on whether or not she has a PMS attack. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be taking a break in just a moment. So I will be sharing with you your Cracker Barrel Old Country Store Cherry Chocolate Cobbler. Try to say that fast five times. I didn't even get it through the first time. Yes, I'm going to be sharing that with you. So when we come back, that will be there. And again, give me a buzz if you would like to chat. 888-815-9756. Oh, I don't want to forget. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Anna Maria Prezio, a good paisano. We're going to be talking with Anna Maria about the Confessions of a Feng Shui Ghostbuster. She's my special guest. Perfect. Just before Halloween. Yes, ghost stories. Don't you just love them? You're going to be hearing about them tomorrow. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be right back.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Okay, here is the chocolate cherry cobbler. Now, it's so easy. This will serve about 6 people. I'd say if people aren't too full from whatever you've served them, then it'll go for 4. But regardless, this is really tasty. Now, this is these are the ingredients. You're going to need 1.5 cups of all-purpose flour, 1.5 cups of all-purpose flour, 1/2 cup of granulated sugar, 1/2 cup of sugar, 2 teaspoons of baking powder, 2 teaspoons of baking powder, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1/4 cup of butter, 1/4 cup of butter, 6 ounces of your favorite chocolate morsels. I like dark chocolate, but whatever is your favorite, use it. If you like milk chocolate, you can use that too. 1/4 cup milk, 1/4 cup milk, 1 egg, 21-ounce can of cherry pie filling, 21-ounce can of cherry pie filling. You need 1/2 cup of nuts. I'd recommend walnuts, but if you like pecan, use that. You could use almonds. You want to chop them up, though. Now, this is how simple this is. This is really a fast deal. You preheat your oven to 350 degrees. While that oven's preheating, in a large bowl, you take your flour, your sugar, your baking powder, your salt, and your butter, and you cut it with a pastry blender until crumbs are the size of large peas. If you've got a Cuisinart, pop it in the Cuisinart, zip, zip, it's already done. Then you want to put into a double boiler. You've got this other stuff already into the crumbs of the size of peas. Over hot, not boiling water, you want to melt your chocolate chips. You want to remove them from heat and let them cool a little bit at room temperatures, well, about 5 minutes. And then you add your milk and your egg to the melted chocolate and mix that well. Then you blend all of that into your flour mixture. The next thing you do, you're going to need a 2-quart casserole dish. You put your cherry pie filling in the bottom of that 2-quart casserole, and you drop your chocolate batter randomly over the cherries, sprinkle it with chopped nuts, and then bake it at 350 degrees for 40 to 45 minutes. Oh, does that smell good, and does it look good, and make sure you have some vanilla ice cream or whipped cream that you want to put over the top to complement it. And if you really want to get decadent, melt some extra chocolate fudge sauce and put it over the top. Oh, I know, but if you're going to do it, why not do it well? But this is such an easy recipe. And when you serve it, obviously it's going to stay hot in that 2-quart casserole for a while. And if you have something that you can wrap around your casserole, I know I have a 2-quart casserole dish that has a cork holder that I put it in. So it stays hot. Anything I put in there stays hot for a good deal of time. So if you're having guests over for dinner and you fix this in advance, it's still going to be deliciously warm after you share your meal or whatever it is that you're doing. And it's just with hot coffee or tea afterward, it's just absolutely marvelous. So you're going to be able to make some people very, very happy, especially if you yourself love the combination of chocolate and cherries. And that happens to be one of my husband's favorites. That's why this recipe so appealed to me. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. People make a difference because of how they think and the actions that they put with their thinking. I wanted to share a story with you about two ladies. They're actually, could be about three, but it's more about two. And this woman, her name is Caroline. She found herself really having some tough times. She's 68 years of age, she's retired, and she lives by herself. Now, there is a friend that she ended up cultivating. Her name is Annie, she's 27, and Annie works as a part-time bank teller. She's married, she has 2 children. She said, "We are so far apart in age, and we are so different in interest." But she said, "We had a common need. A car." Now, what happened to bring these two women together? Carolyn's car broke down last summer, and she wasn't in a position to fix it. She couldn't take the bus because the bus wasn't able to take her wherever she wanted to go. It just wasn't working. So she was in a dilemma, and a friend had a suggestion for her. She said, "My daughter Annie's been using my old Pontiac while her husband job hunts. He got laid off, and I know they could use help with the gas. Maybe the two of you could share the car." Well, that was sort of a new thought for Carolyn, because she'd never shared a car with anyone. She said, "You know what? I'm pretty territorial. Automobiles, that's your own space." Still, she said, "I really had to get practical. I had to do some errands, and I really needed to have an automobile." So she gave Annie a call. Annie was thrilled. She said, "This is great." Of course, Carolyn said, "I'll be happy to pay for the gas." So they worked out a schedule. And for 3 days a week, Carolyn could run her errands and go see her doctor as she needed, then Annie said, "Well, you can have the car, and then we'll just, do what we need to do." Well, this was really a new life-changing experience for Carolyn. The reason being is that when it would come time for them to switch, they would drive whoever had to be driven home so that the switch could be done. And during that drive, they would talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. Well, Carolyn learned that Annie had a lot of challenges in her life. Not only was it finances, her dad's health wasn't very good, but Annie had a wonderful attitude about life. In fact, Carolyn said her attitude was so good about things, it really made a difference with her own. And there came a day when Carolyn asked Annie, "How in the world do you cope with all of these things that you're going through?" Annie's response was, "It's faith. Life doesn't always turn out the way I want, but I make the best of it, and I trust that things will work out, and they do, just like this car." With Anne, well, she eventually moved to Los Angeles to be closer to her family. However, the car that she and Annie were using together stayed with Annie's dad. And so she worked out an agreement with Annie's dad, and so she still has the car. But she said, "It's amazing how a simple exchange born of an economic need can become such a blessing. Life doesn't always turn out the way we want, but that doesn't mean it doesn't turn out good." That is so important to remember. Sometimes we get so caught up with our scripts that we fail to realize that maybe there is a good reason that the script didn't turn out the way that it did, or as you expected it to. It turned out because there were other things that had to be taken care of. Here Carolyn at 68 was learning lessons from a young woman, 27, who just delighted in the company because she had someone that she could share expenses with. But more than that, they developed a friendship that goes on till today. Life gives us gifts sometimes in the most unusual way. Don't be afraid of accepting them when they come your way. This is Donna Sebo. Tomorrow we'll be ghost-busting feng shui style. Hope you can join me. Tell your friends, wherever you are, remember always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. Have a magnificent day. Wonderful evening, and we'll be back here tomorrow, same time, same place, right on bbsradio.com, station number one. This is Donna. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.